Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and for the next 2 hours, if you'd like, you're welcome to participate by calling in. If you have a car question or a car problem, if you're having an argument with your wife or your son or your daughter or your auto repair shop or whatever, we can talk about it. And it's real easy. First thing you do is call 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, because we are on 960 The Patriot out of Phoenix of the Salem Network. My last name is Salem, but I have no ownership in the station, although sometimes I say that just to aggravate people. But nevertheless, for the 2 hours, we're going to talk about car repair questions and stuff like that. So if you could join us again, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Tom's owned Action Auto Repair since 1983. I've known him before that. He's at I-17 and Deer Valley Road, northwest corner. And Tom's really, really tenacious, and Tom knows what he's doing. And there's not too many technicians in any zip code in Arizona that are going to be able to yak something to Tom and him not understand that they're not telling him the truth, or they're extending their ability to see or do things or stuff like that. Most all of us that own car repair shops have become pretty proficient at separating fact from fiction when it comes out of the mouth of our technicians. It's not a problem that most of us have to deal with on a regular basis, because really and truly that technician will move on, because he won't make as much money here selling our customers the world as he may make somewhere else. And it's the way it is. So Tom's a good guy. He's got ASC certified master technicians, and the ASC certification is the highest level you can have. I'm an ASC master. He's got ASC masters working for him. I've got ASC masters working for me. It's just the highest certification you can have, and it's everything automotive and light truck. So they also have certifications for RVs and big trucks and stuff like that, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about your cars, the cars that are in your driveway. So Tom's a good guy, Action Auto Repair, I-17, and Deer Valley. And we have a caller, and the noise said we had a caller, and who might that be?
That would be Sandra.
Sandra, good morning.
Hi. Good morning. I have a couple questions.
Okay.
We have a 2019 Canyon. And has about 42,500, 43,000 miles on it. And we've been told by a couple of people that we should be doing transmission fluid and filter. We pull a 19-foot trailer behind it. So we're just curious when we have to do it. Should we be doing it?
Great question.
and can you recommend a place if you think we should do it?
Okay. I can do all of that. First of all, what would be the possibility of you looking at the owner's manual first? Because the owner's manual is written for your car.
Okay, but I can't do it now because I'm in the car. My husband's okay. Driving, so I'm calling.
No, that's fine. That's going to be the default, and I think your Canyon is going to say between 75 and 100,000 miles. I'm pretty sure it's going to be 75 to 100,000 miles. Now, here's what's happening. In Mark Salem's opinion, oftentimes my industry will see that you haul a trailer or see a big hitch on the back of your vehicle, and as a result of that, we will escalate the time frame, and we'll tell you because you haul the trailer and because you do this, you need to go to a 30 or a 50 or 60 or 70 or an 80 service. And I don't buy that 9 out of 10 times. Now, if I pull the stick and the fluid is brown and it smells burnt, then yes, and I'm going to say, here's what new stuff smells like. Here's what your stuff smells like. See the difference. Then we need to do it. And then the question is, am I going to pull the pan and replace the filter and 3 of the 10 quarts of oil? Or am I going to pull the pan, replace the filter, and then flush it and get all 10 quarts of oil? That bill can be $300 or $400. So that's what's kind of going on. If your transmission fluid is cherry red and really nice looking and doesn't smell burnt and you have 43,000 miles on it, I can tell you right now, that's not a candidate. It's just not.
Okay.
I just want you to look under. And now, keep in mind, too, another thing. In your owner's manual, it's going to talk about normal service and severe service. It's not fair. It's very good for a shop for you to go to severe everywhere. But you and I both know that how often is that trailer on the back of your truck?
Okay, yeah, it's not maybe a couple months out of the year.
Exactly, exactly. So yeah, those are the kinds of things that we have to worry about. In a nutshell, here's what's going on. Sandra, in the old days, you came in every 3,000 miles for an oil change, and we got to clip a little bit of your wings each time you came in. Sell you a tire rotation on the first one, and the second one we'd tell you, sell you something else, and then we'd sell you a differential fluid, and then we'd do this kind of fluid, and then we'd do that, and then we'd do spark plugs at 10,000 miles. So we had a regular relationship. That's all changed. Now we see people two and three times a year, and some people only once a year because they're not driving 5, 8, 10,000 miles a year. So we've lost all this business. So now what we're doing, and fluids is a very profitable centerpiece of our industry. And so we're programming, others are programming their staff to start this fluid train going and start talking to people about, you know, let's get some fluid changes in here. And if they were really truthful, they would pull the owner's manual out of your car. They'd walk into the lobby and say, Sandra, look here. Your service is at 50,000 miles. Your fluid, come on in here, Sandra. Look at it. It's just got a tint of brown. This is new fluid. It's kind of cherry red. I'm thinking we need to schedule this somewhere around 50. Wouldn't you have liked that conversation better?
Yes.
Okay. That's kind of what you want. If you want my list of the very best shop, what part of town are you in?
Around Tatum and Bell.
Okay. Blackwell Automotive at Greenway and 40th Street.
Okay.
Blackwell Automotive at Greenway and 40th Street. Now, I'm saying this with a wink of my eye. Are you ready? He's a former convict. He used to smuggle marijuana across the border. He's a good friend of mine, and he knows what he's doing. And if you go in there and say, I'd like to ask Mr. Blackwell if he has any marijuana for sale, he'll know exactly why you're there.
Okay.
But okay. We've been friends, but if for the rest of you that want to look at Mark's favorite shops, is just go to marksalem.com and click on the best car repair shops, and it gives you a geographical map and shows you where everybody's at. But the closest guy to you is Blackwell, and he's a good guy.
Okay, fantastic. I thank you very much.
Okay, Sandra, thank you very much. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We got one caller waiting. Who's that, Gil?
Say hello to Chuck.
Chuck, good morning.
Hey, Mark, how you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Good. Hey, listen, I bought a Honda quad. I heard you talking about getting your quads running for your grandkids one time. And I have it up a place up around 6,500 foot at a cabin I own.
Okay.
And it starts great. It idles perfect. And it runs great when it's cold. As soon as it warms up, if you're just driving along the level, it has a constant mist in it. If you start heading up a hill and give it some gas, runs great, no misses. But again, as soon as it, in other words, the engine's hardly working, it just has a constant mist in it.
Okay.
Wondered what could possibly be a problem.
Is it a fuel-injected quad or a carbureted quad?
No, it's carbureted. It's a 2002
okay.
single cylinder.
Okay. Now, I want you to know that the carburetor itself, it has a main jet in the bottom of the bowl, and then it has this rod that kind of looks like it plugs it up. And when you throttle up, the rod is lifted out of the hole, and the rod is a thousandths of an inch smaller than the hole. And it's also tapered. And so that as that rod comes up, it opens up that hole more and more, and that's called the main jet, and then you get fuel. So I'm thinking that you've got the main jet kind of plugged up with some trash, which would mean you pull the bowl off the carburetor, clean it up, and put it back on, and you'll know if the bottom of the carburetor has a bunch of trash in it or water in it. Or it could be that you need, because you're up at 65,000 feet. Now, let me ask you a question. Let's pretend that the hole in the main jet is 30 thousandths. Let's pretend that the rod itself is 20 thousandths. Now, if we need more fuel at 5,000 miles, we can either make the main jet bigger or the rod smaller. and you're going to get more fuel. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have a shop that you take it to?
No, I don't have a shop.
Okay. Are you up and down the mountain through Ryan Payson?
No, I'm up near Prescott.
Okay. I don't know anybody over in that area to send you to. There is a good a motorcycle shop down in Rye on the bottom side of the mountain in Payson that I take mine to every once in a while when they have the equipment necessary that I can't do it. But that would be something that you could get on the internet, or you could do this. Call a repair shop close to you and just say to them, I'm bringing this 1,200-foot Honda up to 6,500-foot, and what typically would you do to reacclimate my bike, my quad, to this 6,500, and call two or three of the shops and get prices from all of them. I'll tell you a quick story. There's a guy up here named Mel who's a lawyer that I've worked for 100 years, and he had this Honda quad, and he was always complaining. And I said, you know, you can complain all you want, but my wife's not going to let me tow your quad to my house and start a quad shop at my house. So I can't help you. So one day he calls me and he says, is there anything else you have on your plate? Any ideas? And I said, you know what? Four Seasons is down at the bottom of Ryan Payson. And I got to go down there anyway. So I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to grab your quad. I'm going to put it on my trailer. I'm going to drop it off. Nate's there. I'm going to tell Nate, drive this and stuff. So Nate says, he calls me up and he goes, it just needs a rejet. And he says, this thing's set for 1,200 Phoenix, and he's up here a whole lot higher. Well, I called Mel, I don't know, 30 days later, I've already paid the bill and he's already paid me. And I say, yeah, how's everything going? And he goes, oh gosh, does it run better? And so that's the area I think you're going to fall into. And I think his bill, he had some other stuff done. He wanted the differential fluid changed and stuff like that. But I think the swap over was like 140, pull the carburetor, rejet it, put it back on. And that included the parts. I think it was about that. Okay?
Okay. So you're thinking more of a rejet than a clogged jet problem. Because, like I said, it runs perfect when it's cold. And I think I heard you say one time that when an engine's cold, it needs more fuel.
Yeah, but the choke's on. See, we're shutting off the air, so we're getting given more fuel. So we're artificially richening it up.
It's a manual choke.
I understand that.
It's a manual choke.
Okay, well then, if that's the case, then to test my hypothesis, when you get to the position where the bike is acting up, then manually choke it slowly, and can you choke the miss out of it? But I'll tell you something else that I'd paid attention to. You talked about that this thing missed at this time, but you didn't say anything else that this thing missed on a throttle up or wide open throttle. And that main jet, yeah, and so that's the reason I'm focusing on the main jet. Now there is an idle jet in there too, and they'll probably change that as well. The main jet is cracked off throttle. Just as soon as you crack the throttle, we're going to go into the main jet. The idle provides fuel to it when it's sitting there by itself. You could also take the air filter lid off of it, take a little carb spray or some ether, and just when it's missing, da 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 da, then go inside the air box, and all of a sudden it smooths right out. Again, we're running lean. And it's not a spark plug, it's not a coil, because it goes away. So I did listen to what you said. But I got to run. Thank you very much, 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. When it comes to transmissions, there's just one shop in the valley that I know of that's been around since Jesus was a baby. The guy knows transmissions inside and out, and he knows the ones from the 50s and 60s all the way to the new electronic 8 and 10 speeds. And that's Automatic Transmission Exchange. They're at 40th Street in Washington. Phil's been there a very, very long time. And under the right circumstances, you can call. If you can duplicate the problem, he'll assign someone to go with you. But you cannot take his staffer and take him for a two-hour ride until you can make it happen, because that's not fair. So you can do that. You can call and say, I can make it happen, I promise. Can I have somebody ride with me? And they'll accommodate you. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. Real quick, Chuck with the Honda Quad, I hope you're listening, but I want you to do one other thing. I want you to get it really warmed up, and I want you to find some place that you're not going to be bothered by any traffic or any hazards. And I want you to throttle up like in third gear, second or third gear, throttle up hard, and I want you to pull the manual choke, and the motor's going to go, whoa, and when it gets down to the bottom, push the choke in, and then pull it out. I want you to push and pull the manual choke, and we're going to suck hard on the carburetor. You see, when you're driving down the road, air's going through the air filter, and it's going through the venturi of the carburetor, but when we hammer the choke, the engine sucks on the carburetor, and oftentimes it'll suck trash out of the jet. So if we have a bunch of trash in the jet, sometimes that will fix it. I'm willing to say that 40% of the time, maybe even 50% of the time, I've got a quad off-road vehicle with a problem with a carburetor. About half the time, after four or five of, you know, revving it up real high, going real fast, and then pulling the choke until it almost dies, and then pushing the choke back in, sometimes that works. Andrew, you're up. How can I help you?
Good morning. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
Excellent. I have a 2016 F-150 5.0 V8. And when I'm at a stoplight, when I'm at idle, it stalls. It
okay.
runs, and it's gotten progressively worse. I've thrown some carb throttle body cleaner into the air intake.
Okay.
Seems to have helped, but it's not, it's still stalling. So just checking to see what you would suggest.
Well, let's just talk about fuel injection and how we get a title in the first place. We're going to squirt fuel in there, and the computer knows that the at wide open throttle, it sounds like and looks like a fire hose, but at idle, it goes like this. Similar to that. So the question is do we have enough fuel? And if it'll do 60, 70, and if your wife's driving 90 or 100, then it has enough fuel, and we're not talking about a fuel supply problem. We're not talking about a plugged fuel filter. We're talking about, okay. In that case, then it could be an air problem. And, of course, there's an idle air control motor, and it's electronically controlled by the computer, and the computer will open and close and create a vacuum leak to control the idle. So
right.
I want you to Google cleaning the throttle blades on your 5-liter.
Okay.
And they're going to tell you to take the snorkel off the front. You're going to see the throttle blades there. Then you're going to have your wife key in your pocket now. Key in your pocket. She's going to push the throttle to the floor, and you're going to spray and clean the area where the blades touch the mouth of the intake.
Got it.
And here's what's, we need a metered amount of air around the blades, and when you open and close after a million miles, we create this dust and dirt line that prevents there from being air. So you're going to take a long screwdriver, you're going to tape a big rock, a red rag to it, you're going to spray the hell out of that thing, and then she's going to open the flap horizontal, and now that thing's all gooey with carb spray, and you're going to clean up the intake and around the throttle blades. Then you're going to disconnect the battery and walk away for just 5-10 minutes, come back, put the negative cable back on, and go drive it, because it's going to have to relearn now the idle procedure. And that might take that might take a little while. But see if there's some. But I want to tell you, on a 1 to 10 scale, for the really good shops in town, this problem is a 3. A 3 in a diagnosis. It's no big deal.
Right,
it's just a matter of plugging in a scanner.
Okay? All right, sounds great. Thank you so much.
You betcha. Larkin, you're up next. How can I help you?
Oh, you can buy my Ford from me.
You know what? You're
going
to start off a conversation where you want me to help you, and the first thing you say is you want me to buy your Ford. Okay, Larkin.
I've been messing with this thing for 3 days. Rounding a corner, coming into, I live in a trailer park,
okay.
coming into the gate, the engine just died, like shutting it off with a key.
Okay.
I got it towed into the driveway. I've got a lot of mechanical experience behind, but I'm not very high tech involved. But anyway, first thing I did.
Wait a minute. Tell me what kind of car it is.
Oh, I'm sorry. 03 F-150 Super Cruise.
But it's fuel injected, right? It's not carbureted.
Yes.
Okay.
4.6.
Okay.
Got all the bells and whistles. But anyway, it died.
Okay.
And I tried to restart it, and it almost started. So I'm thinking, okay, I've got a fuel filter plugging up or a pump going down. Got into the driveway. Next day, started testing. When I turn the key on, with the lines disconnected, I get that surge of fuel for a couple seconds, and that's it. When I crank it, I get absolutely nothing. So I began checking everything, fuses, relays, the inertia switch.
We only got like 2-3 minutes left, so go.
Oh, okay. Well, anyway, I put a new pump in it, and I still have the same issue. Do you have any ideas? Every fuse, every relay, I took the control box out, tested everything on the back. I got current everywhere I need
okay.
to be.
Okay, you don't have what it takes, and that's a fuel pressure gauge. So go to your auto parts store and rent a fuel pressure gauge and plug it in. And when you turn the key on, it should fire up the fuel pump, and the fuel pump should hold 40 to 50, 60 pounds of pressure, and it should start running.
I did that also.
And you have no fuel pressure.
I had like 26, 27 pounds, but then it goes away. I mean, no fuel.
Well, that's not enough.
Pushing the Schrader valve.
That's not enough. And we don't do Schrader valve and analyzation. So we don't look at the. I'm not good enough. I'm as old as you or older, and I'm not good enough to look at the Schrader valve and determine if that's good enough or not. That's why we have to have a gauge. I'm sure your spec is 40 to 60 PSI. So the real question is what's the matter with it? Is it the fuel pressure regulator that's bad on it, or is it the relay? I know, but you're going to say that each and every time. But my point is if everything I guess you say you've checked and fixed, then why are we talking?
Because it's still not running. Okay. I have a dead wire in the harness at the fuel pump. It's the ink and black.
Okay. I can't stretch this into the break. So all I can tell you is what I've already told you. I know you checked all the relays and all that kind of stuff, but we would plug in a scanner and we would look at everything, and we would know where the grounds are and where the powers are and all that kind of stuff. So I mean, you can get a wiring diagram, but if you got power, if you don't have power to there, why don't you just jump 12 volts from the battery over to find out the pin on the relay and just jab it with a screwdriver and clip your thing there and see if you can fire up the pump. And if it fires and runs, then you already told me that everything in the control panel was fine, the fuse panel, but obviously it's not. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. We have 5 lines, and none of them are taken. So if you have a car question or a car problem, or if you want me to solve a dispute between you and the neighbor guy on whether premium is necessary for his lawnmower or his regular better or whatever, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Automotive Dynamics has been in Sun City since 1982, but I've known Chuck longer than that. Chuck was actually a gas station guy when I was in high school and worked at the Shell station at Broadway and Priest in Tempe. So I've known Chuck for a long time. So when folks ask me about Sun City, I really tell them there's only one shop that I would recommend, Automotive Dynamics. They're on the north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. Good place if you live in that particular area. We were talking to Larkin a few minutes ago and about his Ford truck and running and not running, and he was going through a series of things. I checked fuses, I checked modules, I checked the power control box with the fuse box is another word for it, and he checked relays and all that kind of stuff. But here's the problem. With the newer model cars, and I'm talking about when we move from carburetors to fuel injection, we rewired things differently. For instance, there's cars and trucks out there right now that we used to send power to the fuel pump and we would interrupt the ground. And today we have vehicles out there where it's just the opposite. The key switch will interrupt the power supply to the pump. The ground is there all the time. If you go back in time and you say, well, I checked for power and it has power. Well, if this is a ground-switched circuit, if we're going to switch on and off this device by interrupting the ground, yes, it's going to have power all the time. So those are the things that have to be done, and that's part of the diagnostic process. And every one of you has paid that. Everybody that's had car repair done had to pay for the diagnostics. The fact of the matter is that what people don't realize, and many of you will recognize this, sometimes it takes $100 to find it, or $50 to find it, or $28 to find it, and $1 to fix it. Sometimes it does. But sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it takes $80 to find it, and $350 to fix it. It just depends. But the idea is finding the problem, identifying specifically why his truck won't run, why the fuel pump isn't energized. Us old guys, We just take long jumper wires, and we go to the battery, and they're fused, which means if we hit ground and we're not going to smoke your truck's wiring harness, we take those two, and we go back, and we find the two power wires that go into the fuel pump. We have a gauge hooked up, and we fire up both power and ground on the fuel pump, and look at the gauge. And if it goes to 10, 12, 15, and won't go any higher, then more. I'm giving it 12 volts. I need to see more than that. I need to see 40, 50, 60. Or if it doesn't light at all, then something's wrong. And so my power, my ground is defective. It's my fault. Or it's just the pumps get bad. So those are the kinds of things that are difficult to explain. And most people don't have the technology. They don't have the meters. They don't have the handheld analyzers. They don't have the knowledge on where to check for power that goes to the fuel pump. And almost all the time it comes from the fuel pump relay. But the relay has 5, 6, 7, 8 terminals. So now where do you go? Because I got power coming into the relay and I got to have power coming out. And you can't check power out when the relay's plugged in. So that creates a problem. And that's what it's all about. So 602-508-0960, and we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
We have Randy.
Randy, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you.
Right. I have a tough one that I've been dealing with, so I think this is going to be your third Ford F-150 in a row.
Okay.
So I have a 2010 F-150, and my rack and pinion went out.
Okay.
And everything on the truck was perfectly fine before this happened, and it actually went out when I was backing into my driveway. But I replaced the rack and pinion myself, and while I was under there, I needed new struts, so I replaced the struts in my upper control arms because the ball joints were bad.
Okay.
And I took it in to have it aligned. They aligned the truck, and we went on the test drive, and when we drove it around, every time I go around a corner, like a kind of a sharp corner at somewhat of a speed, the traction control comes on in the front. If I hit my traction control button and turn my traction control off, the traction control will never come on when I go around a corner. I've taken it into two shops, and neither one of them were able to diagnose it.
1 minute.
One of them charged me, and one of them didn't. I'm stuck there. Any ideas?
Well, you got a whole lot going on here. I'm not quite sure I understand why the rack and pinion is a part of this, because all we have is fluid, and that has nothing to do with your traction control light. And I don't really understand why it's on when we're turning a tight corner or turning a corner that we're getting this traction control light on. But I'm going to bet, I'm 60% sure I'm right, that we've lost a wheel sensor. And the wheel sensor has to be coming off one of those two front wheels, and you're never going to know if it's good or bad unless you have a scanner that you can plug in and drive it down the road. Now, let me ask you this. Does it do it more on a left turn or a right turn?
I think probably more on the left turn, to be honest with you.
Okay. Because think about this. Left turn, which tire spins the further arc? On a left turn.
The further arc, the outside one?
Yeah. Yeah, the right one. The right one. It's right?
Yep.
On a left turn. So if you determine that as you drive it and you make left turns and right turns, that it's predominantly on the left side, then the question is, it can be either tire, but it's the arc. It's the smaller arc. And to be honest with you, I would clear the codes, plug in a scanner, and I'd just go drive circles around it until the code came back.
Yeah.
And I could see which one of the sensors is bad. If you want to play games, they're not that expensive. Just replace both front sensors. But before you do, make sure the wiring is good. Make sure that the magnets are clean. Make sure all that stuff is done, because that's important. But not too long ago, I had one of these. I had a traction control and ABS light coming on, and it would only happen on a right turn, and it was a front tire. It was only on a right turn. Well, the front tire moves, and the wire harness on one end of this is stable, and on the other, it's tied. And so I started looking at it, and the right one looked worse than the left one. So on a whim, I didn't want to go plug in a scanner right then, so I put up the right side on, and I hit it right. Of course, I would have paid for the – I would have probably just left the sensor in there if I ended up doing the left one, but I wouldn't have taken the time. But this isn't that bad. What part of town do you live in?
I live on the East Valley. in Gilbert.
Okay. You got two choices. You could go to marksalem.com, but that's at I-10 and Warner. And right now, everybody's super, super busy, so you'd need an appointment. But you could also call Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street and Stapley in Mesa.
Okay.
Thompson's Auto Repair. And tell Brian or Thelma, husband and wife, that Mark says that you don't have a prayer in hell of fixing this thing. And that will tickle them to death. And I also want you to know, too, and everybody else know, I don't make a dime on the deals. I won't take it. I don't do it. But I get joy out of sending you to a shop I know that's capable. And on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 4, 5, maybe. This is no big deal.
Okay.
All right?
Awesome.
Okay.
I appreciate you.
Thank you. And we'll be right back. 45 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, all five lines are open. We're going to be here for another hour. We're going to go till noon. But if you have a car question or a car problem, then the phone number to call is 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Gil will answer the phone. He'll ask you a really dumb question, but they script what he says. He says, do you want to talk to Mark? I'm teasing him. He's one of the best board operators and a guy that makes me sound and hit all my marks and do everything, and I'm really appreciative, but he's the one that answers the phone. So 602-508-0960. I had an email from a gentleman who had a car, and he took it into shop number one, and shop number one said that he needed his cooling system changed, and so they flushed it, and then he had a problem, and then it went to shop number two, and then shop number three, and then there was a bunch of people involved, and then there's an insurance company involved, and evidently there was a mismatch of coolant, and the wrong coolant was installed, which caused this kind of problem, and this problem caused major engine problems, and now it's in for repair, and on and on and on. This thing went on and on and on. I'm probably going to get to talk to him later today, because I asked him to give me a phone number so I could call him, but this is what I'm going to tell him. This is if, in fact, it's something like that, where the shop created the problem, and I doubt it ever is, and I've never seen a single instance of this ever happening. But if they find out, then that's covered under his automotive policy, and that's damage to our car by others. So he can file a claim, and evidently he has, and his insurance company has accepted responsibility for it. But here's what's going on as far as I'm concerned. He starts off with a cooling system problem, and he has the cooling system flush done when it's got kind of miles that I'm a little uncomfortable with. It's too early for this kind of a problem. Now, everybody from that point forward is blaming the shop number one, that he didn't get all the old coolant out of it, then he used the wrong coolant. And we always hear this from the dealers. He used the wrong coolant. Well, they wouldn't know if it's the wrong coolant if it jumped up and bit him in the face, and neither would I. There's no way until you do a scientific analysis. And here's the problem. There's probably 30 different brands of universal coolant out there. So, Mr. Smarty Pants coolant expert, tell me, what's the matter with this coolant? Well, it's not blue. Oh, well, there's a universal out there that's orange and one that's yellow. Those will work, and they say they'll work, and they're made by DuPont. So are you arguing with them? So you want to just put blue in there because that's what you sell, and you know that there's a huge markup on blue, and it's very expensive, and it's perceived by the public to be the best. And I'm using blue as a stupid example. It could be orange. It could be pink. It could be red. It could be anything. But this whole thing just gets uglier and uglier and uglier. And then somebody goes in and pulls out a couple of parts of the cooling system, and what do they find? A little corrosion. And all of a sudden, now we have a major problem where the engine needs to be overhauled. This has just got completely out of control. And there's miles on this car that suggest that this is normal corrosion. The pictures I see are normal. But I don't want to be on the side of anybody who wants me to point at the first shop because they didn't use blue coolant and they put orange coolant or green coolant in it. That's craziness. And this whole idea of us mixing coolant and going to cause your car to just die an early death, I've never seen one. I've seen lots of people who said that, but when the the manure hits the fan, and you have to stand up in front of a judge and a jury and swear that you're an expert and tell everybody why you think this is going on, and then you have some sharp attorney just hand you your butt on a paper plate because he knows more than you do because he took a fast course on coolant, then you're in trouble. So it's just one of those things. It's really easy for everybody to point, but this went from a radiator issue to a complete engine. I'm going to tell you that the last shop that has this is the catalyst for this whole thing, because they have wound what is nothing more than a coolant leak into a replacement of the engine, and it just so happens that they are the manufacturer of the car. And so isn't it convenient that they're perceived by the public, not by Mark Salem, as being the experts on that car, but isn't it perceivable that everyone's just going to back up and say, okay, well, if they say that this it needs a whole new engine, well, of course they do once they find out that the insurance company, and this is in the independent market and the chain store as well, I want to tell you, there's lots of bad independent guys, lots of bad chain store guys, there's lots of bad dealers. There's lots. But when you get up and you find out that the insurance company's involved, they're going to cave in. They want the car fixed. They want the customer happy. Just get it done, whatever it takes. So that's kind of what's going on right now. I feel bad for Steve. I feel bad because he's in the middle of all this and he's trying to make sense. My message to Steve is going to be, look at your insurance company's picking up the bill. Just sit still. Let them get it all taken care of. Your insurance company, you'll pay the deductible and we're done. That's all. And you have a warranty on this for this car. Okay, who's first?
Rick.
Rick, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I have a 1965 Corvette that needs fiberglass work and painting work. And I'm looking for a shop that does restoration quality work. Any ideas?
I want you to call Blackwell Automotive. I'm not quite sure. Let me tell you, first of all, I've always had some really good paint and body shops on my list of car repair shops, but the conglomerates have bought most of them out. And I'm not a conglomerate guy. I want the owner on site. I want the owner to know right from wrong. I want the owner to have Bondo dust in his ears. I don't want some guy in San Diego telling, a bunch of young men how to run the shop under those environments. I don't want that. So I want you to call Blackwell and I want you to pose that question to Tom Blackwell. Because he does vintage cars. He does old Corvettes. But I'm not sure he's doing the body work, but I can tell you this much, he'll know who does. But I would trust him one way or the other. Tom Blackwell at Blackwell Automotive, okay?
Thank you very much.
You betcha. You betcha. And who's next?
Say hello to Mike.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Hey, we're doing good, Mark. Really enjoy your show. It's a good one today, too. Question, I've got a Jeep, just turned 100,000 miles. Friend told me, okay, it's time to replace the fuel injectors. Now, I've never heard this before, so is that true? If not, when do I change them?
You change them when one of them's bad. That's all. No, this is another, I would say, let me do it this way, Mike. How old are you, Mike?
I'm 80.
Okay. Most of your friends have their original knees? A couple of them probably have.
A lot of them.
You know where I'm going, don't you?
Don't ask where most of my friends are. Just say I outlived most of my friends,
okay? It's fair to say that we don't send people in at a certain age and replace one knee or both knee because that's what everybody needs to have done or that's the most common time or that's whatever. I would never, if some technician went to one of my service riders, one of my techs, and said, oh, yeah, he's got 100,000 miles, he needs a full set of injector, I would be so mad. I mean, my panties would be wadded up so tight, my voice would rise. But it would be loud, and I would use bad words. And I would say, what are you thinking? So who are you to they're working fine. It passed emissions the last time. He's not complaining about fuel economy, and he's not smelling gas. What are you going to fix, buddy? Those are the symptoms. So, no, that's just a crazy idea. It's a wives' tale that got put together on YouTube, and every injector we replace, here's what happens. A car comes in, it's got a miss. So we have to find out if it's a mechanical problem, if it's a valve problem, or if it's an injector problem, or a spark problem. Because that's what's causing the miss. So we have to figure that out. If we get to the point where it's a fuel delivery problem, what most shops are going to do is we're going to take number 4 injector out and swap it with number 5. So we're going to take 4 and put in 5, 5 and put in 4. We're going to start it back up, go drive the car, and you know what? The problem moved. Well, it's got a bad injector. We're done. You see my point? So if you don't have a check engine light, and if you don't have a check engine light, and if you don't have any problems, and your fuel economy hasn't crashed, and you've been passing emissions, then put $3 in the plate the next time it passes by you to compensate Mark's passage sometime in the future, because Mark's not always been a good person, and maybe your $3 will help grease the skids.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much. Appreciate that. Okay. Save me a headache. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Wish you a good one. So long.
All righty, bye-bye. The answer is no, don't. That's a crazy idea. That's just a crazy idea. That's like, well, you got one bad tire and let's put all of them on. Well, if they're all bald, yes. But if one bad tire and it only has 6,000 miles on it, then it doesn't have a reflection on the other ones. Who's next?
Doug.
Doug, good morning.
Morning, Mark. Yeah, so I got a camper trailer question.
Okay.
So I've got a Coleman, and on the label it says it's 4,800 pounds, and I've got an 08 Sequoia. I'm wondering if that's sufficient to haul that thing.
Piece of cake. I want you to look in your owner's manual, and I want you to find the GCWR, gross combined vehicle weight rating. Gross combined.
I believe it says 71.
Okay.
Is that on in the book or on the label on the door?
Well, there's going to be gross. There's two of them, GCWR and GVWR. GC is gross combined. That's tow vehicle and trailer. You can't go past that, what the tow vehicle's got. The tow vehicle, in a sense, could be a 5,000-pound tow vehicle, and it's got a 10,000-pound gross combined, which means 5 on the tow vehicle and 5 on the trailer. Okay? So that's a 10,000-pound combined. The gross vehicle weight is what you need for your tow vehicle. And then the gross combined, the difference, it's a simple math. The difference is how much trailer you can pull. Let me ask you a question. How many axles on this trailer?
2.
Okay, so you've got four tires.
It's got a double, yeah. And
okay,
the box is only 17 foot, so it's about a 20 foot trailer.
1 minute.
Okay. None of that means anything to the government or to me as an expert in this field. It's just you're going to find both of these in the owner's manual. GVWR, that's vehicle number 1. That's gross vehicle weight rating. That's you, your wife, all the kids, and all her beer. Okay, that's in the vehicle. That's the tow vehicle. Then you got the trailer. So I just did this for my sister, and I'll tell you what the math was. The vehicle that they were driving was 8,000 pounds gross, and they had a trailer for 12,000 pounds. So 8 and 12 is a 20 gross combined. So the GCWR, they need 18, okay, or 12. I don't remember what my math was, but it was, well, they were way over. The gross combined of the vehicle was like 36,000 pounds, way over. So they were in really good shape. So in that case, you're fine. We'll be back. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we have 5 lines available. Gil is my engineer. He's the one that keeps me on track. We've been together for I don't know how many years. I've been at this station and doing a live show in Phoenix for since 2011, and Gil's pretty much been there the entire time. So anyway, his number is 602-508-0960, and if you have a car question, then you call up, Gil answers. He says, you want to talk to Mark? You say, yeah, and then he whispers in my ear, the next caller is Sandra or Mike or whatever. And that's how it works, 602-508-0960, and the lines are wide open right now. Kurtz Automotive is up at I-17 and Bell Road. I've known, he's on the northeast corner, by the way. I've known Kurt since 1987. I met Kurt one time where a lady in his geographical area had called me and said that she had been told that the engine needed to be replaced by two different shops on her truck. And I said, okay, well then, are you still driving it? She said, yeah. I said, is the oil light on? And she said, no. And I said, okay, well, why did they say that you needed an engine? Well, because the red light does come on. Okay. So I said, why don't you take it over to Kurt's and have them look at it? So Kurt's called me, I don't know, a day later and said, thank you for the referral. And I said, certainly. And I said, what'd you find? And he goes, the oil pressure switch is bad. He says, we fixed her $11,000 engine for a little more than $85. So the oil pressure switch is on the engine, and it turns the red light on and off depending on pressure. So there's a threshold. So if there's at least 10 or 15 pounds of pressure, the light goes off. And if there's not, and it falls below that threshold, the light comes on. Hers was bad. It had oil pressure. Everything was fine. It didn't need an engine, but two said it did. So Kurtz is a good guy. He's up at I-17 and Bell, northeast corner. And if you live in that area and you don't have a garage, I would like to suggest that you talk to him. I want to say I'm sorry to Mike, who called in about his Jeep, and he wanted to know when the injectors were replaced, because I went off on a typical tangent like I do sometimes, and I didn't really answer his question as quickly as I should have. Anyway, the thing of it is that the only time I know that it's reasonable, effective, or necessary to replace all the fuel injectors at the same time is in a contamination issue. Somebody put diesel in a gas, or gas in a diesel, or there's trash, or there's coolant in the fuel system, or there's some kind of corrosion. Now, some people will put DEF, which is diesel exhaust fluid, in the early days, they would put that in their gas tank, and the gas tank would then have diesel fuel with DEF, and diesel exhaust fluid is very caustic. It eats metal like ice cream. So that goes through the injectors on the diesel, and it wipes out the injectors. And so you have to do all of them. So the bottom line is it just depends on what it is. But I also work for insurance companies, law enforcement, and courts. I work for the county attorney. I've worked for the county public defender's office. I work for attorneys that work for insurance companies, and I've worked on both sides of issues, both the plaintiff and the defense and so forth. It's real easy, but you don't replace all the fuel injectors because you think your car is going to love you more, and you don't replace your fuel injectors at a certain miles at all, period. You wait till you have one go bad. Then if one went bad and there's no fuel contamination, and somebody didn't accidentally put the wrong fuel in your car at one time or another, which caused one injector to go bad, then leave it alone. Just do one. There's no savings in doing all of them at the same time. There are, if you have a four-cylinder Honda and you need four fuel injectors, we got to take four out and put four in. And it doesn't make, and if you divide it up at one at a time, then it's 25% of the bill for the first one and 25% of the bill for the second one, because it's a duplication. It's the same thing. Take it out, put it in. Take it out, put it in. So the idea that somebody says that you need to replace your fuel injectors at 100,000 miles is just not valid in any way, shape, or form. But you could do this if you wanted to. Oh, the phone number again, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. You can play reverse psychology in our industry as well. You could call, and there's three different kinds of shops out there. There's chain stores, dealerships, and independents. I think you'll agree that that's pretty much covers the gamut. You can call all three of them in your neighborhood and ask them the same question, and you're likely to get different answers. But most of the time, if you call more than three, you're going to get a majority that laughs at the question or says, no, that's a very valid question. So if you have a contaminated brake fluid system, brake fluid and water don't mix. So if the car was sitting in the stream or in the wash for a half a day, then we have to take all the brake fluid out and put all new brake fluid in. That's a given. We can't just bleed one tire, one wheel, or anything like that at all. We have to bleed all four brake apparatuses at each one and the master cylinder, and probably replace the master. So those are the kinds of questions that you can find if you phrase the question right. But anyway, we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Mark.
Mark, good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I just wanted to call and thank you about 3 weeks ago. maybe 4 weeks ago, somewhere in there, I called you and asked for a recommendation for to fix my blower motor and resistor on the Ford F-150, and you sent me to those folks just off the 101 in McDowell, and it was a really good experience. I had it there. I made an appointment, had it there at 8 o'clock. I put my bike in the back of the bed of the truck. I rode to a breakfast joint, and before I could finish my breakfast and coffee, they called me, diagnosed the problem. They needed both the blower motor and the resistor, and before lunch or even noontime, they had it done. So they're good folks there. I can't even remember the name of the shop, but it was at the 101 just west on, I think, McDowell, if I remember
okay.
right.
And you spoke to Vicki and Craig, and that's Bell Automotive.
Yeah, good folks. Yeah, it was kind of interesting. You know, it's an old filling station, and my dad had mm-hmm. some days moonlighting back in Omaha at a mobile oil filling station just to make extra money. But you were right. I talked to those folks for a while when we were squaring up, and he actually, the son that took over the business, and Vicki was there then too, but he met her. She used to be one of those that when they used to do full service and wash your windshields, that's how he met her.
Yeah.
You know, that's family business. So good folks. I couldn't remember the name of it, but I wanted to thank you because we had a series of folks coming into town, and I needed to get that fixed as the weather heated up, and so it's working fine, and they did a good job, and fair price, and on time. So thank you.
Well, that you just made my whole day, and as a matter of fact, we always tape the show, and so I started the tape, a new tape, and I'm going to tape the whole thing, and they'll have it within 20 minutes after I'm done with the show, and it's called an attaboy. Folks, he's talking about Craig and Vicki Bell, and they're from Bell Automotive. They're on my list of good shops. They're on McDowell and the 101. He had called and asked if anybody in this geographical area I would recommend, and I said, yeah, go to them. Craig's tall, and you when you shake his hand, it's like shaking a tennis racket. He's got huge hands. And
yep.
And Vicki is as tough, but as a ladylike tough as you can imagine. She doesn't put up with any junk from the technicians. Craig and Vicki and Mark and Renee, my wife, we've all been in the business together, and the girls will laugh about the people that they wanted to fire, but we wouldn't, and vice versa. But Vicki is strong-willed. She handles the front counter with an iron fist, and just like my wife, she knows a hell of a lot about cars. And so you've made my day by calling. Thank you very much. And that's
well. Thank you. Thank you for the referral. You made my day, and you made it easy for us, and that's important.
You pass it on, but thank you very much for that. And again, that's Bell Automotive. It's 8700 East McDowell. It's right there at the 101, the north side of McDowell Road at 101 in Scottsdale. And he comes from a family. They come from a family that actually had this same kind of business for 20 or 30 or 40 years before that. So you're actually talking to families that have been in the auto repair industry and gas station business as well, no longer gas station though, for the last 30, 40, 50 years. And it's worth it. Who's up next?
Say hello to Bobby.
Bobby, good morning.
Hello, Mark. Hey, I had a question on my 14 Mustang. The oil life indicator on the dashboard is stuck on 100%. I reset it after I did my last oil change 4,000 miles ago, and it just won't move. You know how to get that to work again?
I'm a little confused. What does the gauge, is it a light, and what does the light say?
It starts out when you reset it at 100% oil life,
uh-huh.
And then as you drive, it calculates how much oil life you have left.
Okay. And, so you reset it to 100, and it hasn't moved.
100%, yeah. Yeah, and I've heard of this happening on some other Mustangs online, you know, people complaining.
Okay. How many miles have you gone?
Since it was last change?
Since you reset it to 100%, how long has it gone?
About 3,000 miles.
Okay. I'm not quite sure that I would think it's in your best interest. I think we just, you know, it was 3,000 miles, and so I depended on the kind of oil. You know that your oil, next oil change is somewhere between 3 and 5 and 7 and 8, and if you put a synthetic, it'd be,
yeah,
could be 9 or 10. You know that. So let's not worry about that. What I will tell you is that the algorithm and all the inputs to put that together change dramatically when the seasons change, when the temperature changes, when the driving habits change. So I don't want you to spend a dime. I want you to leave it alone. You know when the next oil change is. You've got it written down. You know when it's due. And let's just leave it alone and let's see. Because it's entirely possible that the algorithm in this particular situation, the weather's mild, it's not too hot, it's not too cold, you had a perfect amount of short drives and long drives, you got it 50% of the time, it went to operating temperature. These are all the things that the computer's looking at. So I just want to caution you about, A, worrying about it, B, don't spend any money until we get it to move. And that's it. And if we get it to move, you just leave it alone until it gets down to where you need to change the oil and reset it again. But I just think it's probably the springtime, and we're going to change your oil life. It's going to be a longer time in the spring than it is in the winter. And I think that might be the issue.
I mean, I had the car since it was new, so even after 500 miles, it would drop like down to maybe 96% of the night, something like that.
Okay.
You know, it was always would move every few days, you know. Not every few days, but every few hundred miles it would drop down like a percent.
Well, the computer's looking at so many different things. It's how many times did you start it and did it go through a heat cycle? So you start it and it goes through a complete heat cycle, then you shut it off. As opposed to going to pick up your wife at the at the hairdresser and coming home, which is not a complete heat cycle. So you can see that the difference. So the computer's looking at how many RPMs, did you reach operating temperature, how long did you drive it, how much was it stop and go, was it city? Well, the computer's looking at all of this. There's no such thing as something that you just replace to fix that. The computer's looking at all of this data. And the only thing I can tell you is, in my experience, and I've been working on cars since in 1968, I worked at a Shell station in Tempe as a pump jockey, and with a small, I've been working on cars the entire time. I was a policeman for 7 years in the middle of all of that, or 7 or 9 or 10, I don't remember. But I've been working on cars 100% of my life since 1994, and I've never fixed this on a car. I've never had to fix this on a car. So it's not something there's not a sensor. There's not going to be something that we're going to replace. I don't know what to do. I wouldn't know if it stuck at that the entire time. I tell you what I would do. If it stuck there, I would take the negative cable off and take the positive cable off, and I would touch the cables together, not the battery terminals. I'd take both cables off and touch them together, and I'd discharge all the capacitors. That's a hard boot. And I'd let the car sit overnight with no battery power to it. I'd hook the positive on first, hook the negative on second, and then I'd go drive it again. And that's the only
thing. I'm going to try
that. You can.
I'm going to try that and let you know what happens next week.
Let's do this. Let's let it go a little longer first. Let's see if we can get it off of 100 to 99. Let's just see, okay? And then we'll go from there. Anyway, I got to run, but thank you, Bobby. Thank you very much. And Mark at MarkSalem.com if you want to tell me your success or your losses. Mark at MarkSalem.com. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. If you'd like one of them, the phone number is 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Gil's going to answer the phone. He says, you want to talk to Mark? You say, yeah. He'll say, what's your name? And he'll put you on hold, and then he whispers in my ear. He says, Fred's your next caller, and after that is Judy, and then after that is Mike. So he tells me that, and then I write it down, and I go in that sequence. So 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about two shops that are on my best car repair shops list. Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Been around since 1967. You're going to see a little gray hair there, but don't let that fool you. Gray hair means experience. Gray hair means been around the block. And gray hair more than anything else means we started with 50s, 40s, and 50s and 60 cars, and now we're in cars with no carburetors, where they have no distributor, they have crankshaft sensors, and some of them don't even have any camshafts anymore. So the transition from Fred Flintstone cars to Microsoft cars, piece of cake. Piece of cake, you know why? Because we know how to fix them at the beginning, and we know how fundamentals work. So Larry Harkos is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. I'm really proud to have them on my list, and I'll give you an example. Someone said that they had taken their car in, and they had water coming onto the passenger side feet. The passenger's feet was cold water. They took it into a couple of different shops, and the estimate was between $1,400 and $1,800. I said, I think we need a fresh pair of eyes. I would suggest you take it to Larry Harker's. Larry Harker's found that the drain tube at the back of the glove box that drains the condensation from the air conditioning unit was plugged up. They unplugged the drain, and when you're underneath the car and you got your coat hanger and you're underneath there, you know that as soon as that drain comes loose, all that yucky water is going to run down your arm into your armpit. That's why the youngest technician is assigned to that job. That's exactly what happened. So I think it was they cleaned up the evaporator case. They blew it dry. They got it all situated. I think the bill was $115, and that's the difference. So if you're in that area, 38th Avenue and Indian School, and you don't already have a repair shop that you really love and really trust, then I promise you can love and trust Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Gil, anybody?
Nope, lines are
okay, open. Line's still open, 602-508-0960. Let me tell you about, we're going to go from gasoline to diesel cars now, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. Strictly Diesel is open Monday through Friday. They sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. And you can really find lots of information if you have a Chevy, a Dodge, or a Ford about some of the options that are available for you. But Nate at Strictly Diesel, he's up at Pinnacle Peak in I-17. I know Nate. We've done radio show together numerous times. And he's just really good. He's a tall. His hands look like tennis rackets. But he knows diesels really, really well. So if you've got it, like I say, Chevy, Ford, or Dodge, no matter whether it's the 90s or the newer ones, if you've got a problem, Nate's a good guy to talk to. And he'll answer your call, and he'll call you back. And he says, I like to talk to people, but he can't tell you how much it's going to cost to fix your car because he doesn't know what's broken. But we're all capable of giving you a range of the diagnostic fees associated with this. So it's not going to be any less than this, and it shouldn't be any more than this. And if it gets up to here, I'm going to call you and ask you for more money, but I'm going to be on the right track. So that's kind of how it works. And that's Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. And who's on?
Say hello to Shelly.
Shelly, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I am calling. I have a 2019 Honda Pilot, and I have that car because I have 7 grandchildren, and they are all in it from 1 week to the next. And so my question is, how important is it that I run the highest premium grade gasoline in the newer version Honda cars?
Okay, I can answer that question, no problem. I wouldn't do it if I were you, no matter what I was told.
Because I've been told, so that's why I'm calling.
Okay, and let me just explain, okay? Let me tell you that in the difference between regular and premium is not only the price, as you well know, but it's the explosion. Now, I want to tell you the difference in an exaggerated way. In an exaggerated way, regular, the boom lasts 3 millionths of a second. So it's in an exaggerated, it's kind of like a boom, okay?
In a regular gas.
It's a little bit faster than premium because in a regular gas, one molecule ignites 100, 100 ignite 1,000. So you know that the explosion is short. Now, in an exaggerated way, premium, one molecule ignites 2, 2 ignites 4, 4 ignites 6, 6, just to give you a visual. It's not true. I'm just giving you a visual. So premium, the burn is longer. 1 millisecond longer. 1 millionth of a second longer is the boom. Your car has a knock sensor, and it has fuel injection, and it has a computer that monitors every aspect of what's going on with that motor. And if you put premium in it, the timing is going to let you have a little bit more timing, but it won't be substantial. You won't be able to tell if it's got regular or premium in it, and neither will I. The only cars I put premium in are the hot rod cars we own and build, and the motors sometimes can be $20,000. And so we're going to put premium in them to make sure, but these cars are not driven with 7 grandkids in them.
Correct.
So I want to tell you something else. Does anybody else drive this but you?
Rarely.
Okay. I don't know how to do. Are you married or do you have a boyfriend?
I married this same fella for 42 years.
That's what I wanted to hear.
I'm married.
Okay. All right. Here's what I want you to do. Get it down there as low as you dare. Give him the keys and say, please go fill it up and don't tell me what you put in it. Okay?
Oh, okay.
And have him do that a couple times. And you got a 50-50 chance of guessing right. But I can tell you, I couldn't tell, and you won't be able to either. You will not notice the difference. And as far as the engine living long, I have never, ever in my life, and right now we're processing somewhere in the vicinity of 20 and 30 cars a day at my shop. I mean, we have 20 bays.
Yeah.
I see lots of cars. And then if you add up all the experience from Ron, who's been a mechanic for 30 years, Eddie, 40 years, Nate, 20 or 30 years, Adam, 30 years, Jeff, 30 years, you add up all of our time, I can speak for everybody. We've never done any repairs on any car because they didn't use premium gas in it. Never.
Awesome.
So that's your answer.
That's what I wanted to hear.
Yep.
I've been suspicious of it, but I didn't have the knowledge of what the difference was. Now I understand.
Well,
and I'll tell you, from high school auto class, this is what I remember. Intake, combustion, fire, exhaust.
Woo!
I understand those four things. That's it. So I thought, this gasoline's got to have something to do with one of those. How bad can it be? There it is.
Okay. It's suck, compress, bang, and exhaust. So we suck the
fuel
in, then we put the spark to it, and then there's the boom, and then we compress. That gives us power, and then we shove it out the exhaust. So you're good. You're good. But people buy cars. Well, I can't tell you right now. We'll be back in a minute. My aunt is working on it. Shelly, I want you to call back the show, 602-508-0960. I want to ask you about your auto mechanics in the high school arena. I want to ask you about that. And then you've dated yourself, and you came real close to what you meant to say about the four-stroke engine. And so I've looked it up, and you and I are going to have fun. So call back Shelly, 602-508-0960. Alan, how are you? How can I help you? Okay, I'm sorry.
I had never heard of the camshaftless engines, and so I was just wondering. I looked it up here. I was waiting here on the line a little bit, and I'm just kind of, how does that actually work? I mean, really want to change, have a little bit of mind control over each valve?
Well, the computer is going to energize a solenoid to open and close the valve. And so we're going to use electronics, just like we open and close the fuel injectors right now. So we're going to use electronics, and we're going to have this solenoid that sits over the top of the valve. And so the computer is programmed for all of that. And all we're going to do is open the valve a little bit and shut it, or we're going to hold it open for a longer period of time. But because we have variable valve timing, then we can do all kinds of fancy stuff. And the programming says, well, Mark's got his foot on the floor again, so that means we're going to open the valve, and we're going to shove a bunch of fuel through it, and then we're going to close the valve before the piston comes up and breaks the valve off in the cylinder. So the answer is we can do it. We can do it far more efficiently with electronics than we can a camshaft, but that's where we're at.
Well, camshaft, I guess, is going to be pretty much the same all the time, except if, I guess, it's built into when, you know, RPM goes up. But this computerized control over the valves, amazing, absolutely amazing.
Well, and think about this. We're doing that with timing now. The distributor's gone.
Yeah, sure.
So the spark, so we have 40 degrees of spark we can put on this spark plug. And we're going to do it all at the same, you know, RPM and stuff. But when you start talking, and then before, we had 15 to 20K spark plugs. Today, when you get bit by a coil on a car, it hurts. And we're talking 110K, 120K. So back then, you got 15K, and it bites you, and you go, oh, that's your best deal. Today, nobody wants to get bit by a new electronic, well, anything with coil over ignition, because it makes you wet your pants. It hurts.
Well, that's pretty incredible. That's pretty incredible. I'm 70 years old, and I used to work on Volkswagens back in the 60s and stuff, you know. So I know the basics of engines, and, you know, it is still just compression, fuel, timing. But the way it's done now, it's incredible.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that you pointed that out, and I listen to your show every week because I always learn something. I definitely always learn something.
Thank you. Thank you for your compliments. Thank you very much. I'm hoping Shelley calls back because her and I have to talk about her auto mechanics experience because clearly she took a class. You know, anyway, John, you're up next. What can we do for you today?
Well, Mark, I thought I'd use you as a confessor.
Okay.
Or somebody to confess to. I drive a tow truck, and I had a customer did so much screwing around with his car, his shifter, that it took my mind out of the whole equation. I ended up having to pull his Jeep Grand Cherokee out of his garage with the wheel lift on the back of my flatbed.
Uh-huh.
And it was a one-car-wide garage door opening, so it was kind of a trick to sneak it out of there. After all was said and done, I got the thing to the dealership. It finally sunk in my brain that there's a manual release for the transmission park mode.
I know, but it's not your responsibility to know that. It's the guy who owns the car who's supposed to have read the owner's manual, and he should have known that.
Well, this guy was doing so much that he was lifting the console cover off of the plate around the shifter lever and reaching under it and manually releasing the shifter lever to move it. But it's just moving a switch. It's not actually operating a cable. The release for the transmission arc is in the console cubbyhole behind that.
Yeah.
It's common knowledge. Something I've known for years and years and years. But what he did was he got so much stuff messed up with in that thing that it took my common sense out of the equation somehow. I felt like a complete idiot because when I got to the dealership, I thought about that. You know what? I bet that release is there, and sure enough,
wait a minute. It is. Wait a minute. I got my hand up. I got both hands up. I promise you. I'm with you. I got both my hands up. There has been times, and we've had them on the show today. I've done this and then this, and this, and this, and this, and I'm just going through a mental checklist. And at the end of I don't know. If you did everything right, and, oh, he swears he's done it right. If you've ever done, I don't know what it is. And so we get there and we find out it's out of gas. You know what I mean? So those are.
Oh yeah.
You're not the only one that's been fooled because you're looking at somebody and with all the authority in the world, they're telling you which way the cow ate the cabbage and what they did and what they found and what they should have found and the voltage was 7.25 and an amp draw of 0.2. All this kind of stuff, and you go, oh wow, this guy's good. Well, you get there and you find out that it's out of gas. So don't feel bad. I want to tell you something. Everybody that has grease on their fingernails right now is laughing with you and me because we've been there, all of us. So thank you for raising your hand and saying I have been skunked once.
I was gonna jump in there a little earlier when the guy had the oil life meter that wouldn't change.
Yeah,
because I was gonna say, you know, because I didn't think you were gonna hit on it. I was gonna call in real quick and say, hey, tell him to pull the cables and touch them together and discharge the system. You got it.
Well, you know, in my defense, I've been doing this since 1988. And so, I've got this Rolodex in my head that goes, you know what I mean? And I'm sitting there thinking, what the hell could possibly be wrong? And I'm thinking, it's just got to be the computer input and the input. And I'm going through this, you know, gyrations in my head, and that's how I got to, let's just pull the cables and touch them together and start this whole thing over again. So, but anyway, thank you for calling.
You know what, after learning that from you, I've used it a couple of times, and it works.
It does. It's a complete boot. It's a complete, you're just taking all the history out of it, and you're saying, you are a brand new car, and touching the cables exactly. together. But you have to say, just the cables together, leave the battery alone, because people will go, oh, I'll just put an iron bar across the positive and negative side and blow the battery up. Anyway, got to run. But anyway, if Shelly's on the phone, Gil, you hang on to her. We'll be back right after this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 44 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we've got what effectively is another 20 minutes worth of show. If you'd like to join us, the lines are wide open. No one's on the line. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And we're going to go to Ron, and he's the only one online, but we have four other lines available, and Gil answers the phone, so be nice to him. But, Ron, how can I help you?
Good afternoon. I have a 2011 Hyundai Santa Fe Limited, and I bought the car way too much money not too long ago, but that's the way it goes. And I put a lot of money into the $3,000 to get it worked on. Now, I'm still having a problem with my door opener, the electronic door opener.
Uh-huh.
Number one, it basically, I have to click it sometimes 15, 20 times to get the doors to open. And the key does not fit into the damn door. So I'm limited by what I can do here.
Okay.
What do you think is the problem?
Well,
I put a new battery in it. It's got a new battery
in the key fob.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And when you're inside the car, when you manually activate, lock, and unlock, will it work at the driver's door, and will it do all four locks?
It works. It works perfectly.
Okay.
Perfectly.
But you can't get the key in the outside of the driver's door to manually unlock the door.
Absolutely. And like I said, sometimes I have to hit the electronic door, the fob, 15, 20 times to get it to work.
Okay. Well, there's two issues. I think I would go after the key doesn't fit in the driver's door first. That's kind of plan A. And plan B, does your wife have a fob and you have a fob? Is your fob the one that's been on this car since 11?
No. When I bought the car, they only gave you one.
Okay, well then I would go buy another.
One fob.
I'd go buy another. I'd go to a stereo shop and ask them if they can do it, because oftentimes the stereo guys are really good at that. But I think, you know, from a priority, I think I'd get the door key in the door to where I could unlock it that way first. And
I agree with you 100%.
And then I'd go after the key fob, but batteries, but you've already done it. And that only means that, and your car is 11 years old, and it's you've pushed the buttons on that key fob. Now, if it were me, I'd just take the damn thing apart and see what the heck the deal is. I'd pop it in half. I'd leave the battery in there. There's going to be some rubber condom thing for where the buttons are, but underneath is going to be little black buttons. So I would pop it apart. Now, you don't do this. Don't do this, because if you screw up the fob, then you can't get in your car.
Correct. Absolutely. Okay.
But for me, I would leave all the windows down and I would be prepared. But I would probably go, if it were mine, I would take the fob apart and clean up the inside and see if I could operate it by manually pushing the buttons without using the condom buttons to push them.
Right.
But the thing to do also is call around to a couple of places, a couple of dealers, and say, how much for a new fob? How much for two new fobs for my 2011 Hyundai Santa Fe Limited? Just ask them. And
you have any idea what they ask you for?
I think you're going to be at $100 if you go to the dealer realm, and then I would call a couple of
locks. Dealer wants $450 to do it. Dealer wants
$450. $450. Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what I said.
What part of town do you live in?
Scottsdale.
Okay, north or south?
Uh, over, I wear to 101 Hit Scottsdale Road.
101 Hit Scottsdale Road. Okay. I thought the 101 in Scottsdale Road.
Where the fancy car dealership is.
Okay. So you're in North Scottsdale.
Yes.
call Blackwell Automotive at 40th and Greenway. Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. Telling Mark Salem says you don't have a prayer in hell of being able to replace the fob in this Hyundai, but you thought you'd call anyway, and I'm pretty sure. Now, most of us have traveling locksmiths that do this for us. They're subcontractors. Most of us do. I'm in South Tempe, so I'm a long way away from you. But I'm pretty sure Tom either has a traveling locksmith that will come and fix this car, or he knows, or he can do it himself. And Tom is an old guy like me. And if you say, Mark Salem says don't even try because he knows you can't possibly fix this, it's like waving the red flag in front of the bull, and then we'll see if he can fix it.
At all.
Okay, you try that. You have my permission.
Did you say it was Blackwell?
Blackwell Automotive, 40th Street and Greenway.
I know where that is exactly. Okay, well, thank you very much for your time. Have a good day.
You betcha. Oh, all right. What really, and who might that be?
Say hello to Steve.
Steve, good morning. Steve?
Hi, good morning, guys. Sorry about the delay. Hey, I've got a question about a 2007 Honda Accord. AC questions.
Okay.
Got the left side. I just got back to the store and bought one of the old Chef thermometers there.
Okay.
Right side, I didn't know they'd go this cold, is blowing at 47, 48 degrees. The left side, same, is blowing at 89 degrees. And it just started last year, and it's a lot worse this year.
Okay. The
blower's working great, by the way. Both sides, blower's the same. It's, you know, 1 through 5 is perfect.
Okay, so the blower speeds are the same. Somehow or another, we've come disconnected underneath the dash, and there's ductwork that goes from the air conditioning box, which is behind the glove box, and we're going to be hosing the stuff to the vents on either side. Clearly, the right side or the driver's side vent is no longer attached where it should be. Somebody's going to have to go into the dash and figure out how come that is. And that's all there is to it. Now, I want to caution you, you might want to try that yourself. And if you do, I don't want you to force anything, because when you force stuff and you get a screwdriver in there and you pop what you think is just a popper and you break something, there's nothing cheap about that dashboard at all. Nothing.
I understand.
And so.
Well, and they're deep to get into. So what would an hour of diagnostic cost at a place like yours? Or, you know, how would I figure that out, I think, with somebody else other than me?
Most everybody's going to bid you an hour, and that's anywhere from $125 to $175 for the hour. Most of us are not going to say to you, I'm probably going to fix it for that. That includes finding it and fixing it. Most of us are going to think that, but we're not going to say it. There's a lot of us that have cameras. We're just going to go in the, we're going to drop our camera into your driver's side vent, and we're going to go backwards, and we're going to find out where the problem is. And so is it coming out of the distribution box, which is near the radio? Has anybody done any radio work in this in a long time?
No, I bought it used and just a runner, and now I'm using it again, but no, not that I know of at all.
And because the radio's right in the middle of the dash, and that's probably where the problem is. This really, I would imagine that somebody can pull the dash pad off of this and probably see it. And if Mark is right, and the dash pad comes off easy, and you can see it, it's going to be $150 to take the pad off and put it back on, and it's going to be 50 cents to plug the thing back in and put a sheet metal screw in it so it doesn't come apart again.
Yeah, no, I copy that. I'm just 57 years old, and I remember getting into the dash could take hours of bending upside down at times and things of that nature, and I just don't want to do it anymore.
I understand. And what part of town do you live in?
I'm pretty close, you guys. I'm over here on Baseline and Rural.
Okay. If you choose to have us do that, then call and make an appointment, because right now I think I talked to my daughter, Andy. I'll tell you how bad it is. I went down. I'm up in Payson right now. I just brought the horses up. So I went down, and I thought, you know what? I'm just going to have them do an oil change. They couldn't get me in. I said, wait a minute. My name's on the building out front. And she says, Dad, she says, we're just swamped. So then she says, leave it for the night. And she says, and Mom says you're going to spend the night anyway. And then I'll get it tomorrow morning. Well, then there was a steering box issue. because I got 150,000 miles on it. And I said, just order the steering box and I'll bring it back, because right now it's all it is just a little click and noise, and I can live with that. So they got everything done on my oil change, and she said to me, don't do this again. You need an appointment like everybody else. This is my daughter.
Now,
she's the apple of my eye, my son and my daughter, but he's in Moab because he's with all of his Jeep buddies, because he built all their Jeeps for Moab, so they have their own personal mechanic, yeah, and they take him with them in these high-dollar motorhomes, and he gets to fix the Jeeps that they tear up. But it's his week in heaven, and she understands that. But, yes, we can help you with something like that.
Great. Yeah, I'm lacking a mechanic there, so I'm probably going to have to go your way. I do appreciate your time. That's kind of what I figured. There was an opening somewhere. I just know that it's very difficult to get to at times. So,
and on a 1 to 10 scale, I'm can think of a lot more cars than I'm going to give a 7, 8, 9, or 10 to than your Honda. I'm going to say it's going to be in the – I'm saying it's going to be in the 5 range, give or take a number or two. On a 1
to 10.
Well,
I'll go, like you said, I'll give her a go, and if it gets difficult, then I'll shut it down. If it's pretty easy, maybe it's, you know, the first thing, and there's the box right there. So,
and that's really the answer. But she'll give you the – and it's a good question. What's your diagnostic fee to find it, and then you can bid the fix? And she's going to say, right, all right, I need you to carve off this much money. And I'm proud to tell you that 80% of the time, our diagnostic fee is less than the money we ask you for. We always ask a little high, so we don't have to ask twice. And there's a lot of shops that do the same thing. Okay?
Yep. Thank you, sir, for your time. Have a good day.
You bet. So, anyway, I was hoping Shelly would call back, but Shelly had called, and she had a 19 Honda Pilot, and she takes her grandkids all over the place, and she wanted to know if it was important to run premium gas, and I told her no, it wasn't, because she would never know the difference. Then we got to talking, and she said something about auto mechanics class, and she used a terminology that I'm real familiar with, but she didn't have it entirely correct, and at the time I didn't have it entirely correct. So during the break I looked it up, and so this is, I wanted to tease her about this, but in reality, the four-stroke gasoline engine is described in this fashion. It sucks air and fuel in, then the piston squeezes that, so it takes a basketball and squeezes it to the size of a ping pong ball. Then the spark plug ignites it, which is called the bang, and then we open the exhaust valve and blow all that stuff into the tailpipe. So it's called suck, squeeze, bang, and blow. That was the terminology we used in the 60s and the 70s when we went to high school, and that's how the teacher taught us what a four-stroke gasoline engine does. And in reality, the diesel's the same way. So we suck in fuel and air, then we squeeze it, we compress it. And when we compress it, it raises the temperature. And then when we put spark to that and blow this thing up, the power it has is unbelievable. And the piston is up high, and it explodes, and it drives the piston down, and there's your power stroke. So suck, squeeze, bang, and blow. That's how it is. So she had it almost right, and I had to look it up, so I'm going to admit that I had to look it up. But that's the way they taught it back in the 60s and the 70s in auto mechanics class. Speaking of auto mechanics class, when I was in high school, in Tempe High School, I wasn't a good kid. I wasn't a good person. And there was a teacher there named Ben Elkins, and Ben Elkins was the auto mechanics teacher, and I told my mother I wasn't going to go to high school unless I could be in auto mechanics class. And Mr. Elkins was grateful and gracious enough to make an exception and to take me. So my junior year I was in his class, and he taught me pretty much everything I know today. In the senior year, again, I wasn't the best behaved young man in that Tempe High School arena. So at the end of your junior year, he picked the best of all six automotive classes. The best got to go on to an advanced class. And I'm pretty sure I wasn't going to make it. So
1 minute.
I remember going to the door of the auto mechanics class, and I'm looking down the list, and I see my friends, and my name's on it, the last one. The message is clear. So I was part of the last, I was at the advanced class at Tempe High, and Mr. Elkins taught it. We became friends, and he honored me in a way that no one has ever done in a long time. He came and had me work on his car, and that was an honor because he taught me everything I knew. And one day, the principal of the school at Tempe High and Mr. Elkins were in my lobby, and they were both having me fix their cars. And obviously, that was an honor because I wasn't, like I said, the best kid in the world. So Mr. Elkins from Tempe High School is the reason I am who I am today. For the good stuff, I am. Not the bad. The good stuff. He's already seen the bad. He's already seen the honorary kid that was in his class. But nevertheless, Ben Elkins, I owe it to you. Thank you very much for leading me down this path. You did a good job.